Hi, everybody. Welcome to an Alan Smithy podcast. My name is Matt, and I write at cinemachine.blogspot.com.
And I'm Andrew, and I write at thestopbutton.com.
And this is yet another episode of an Alan Smithy podcast where we break the corporate slogan and don't go with one good movie and one bad movie, but rather we're doing another commentary track for yet another bad movie and also another bad part two movie, coincidentally. We didn't plan it out that way, but I don't know. In a way, you could consider this a sequel to our very first paired episode. It was about episode 13, I think. It was the first one we did that was one good movie and one bad movie because it was Mannequin paired with Terminator 2, a very generic bad movie choice and a very generic good movie choice. But yeah, here we are doing Mannequin 2 on the move from 1991. And let's see, I never saw this before, so it's all new to me. You've seen it before, and you even have a little inside information on it. But we're going to watch it and talk about it. So I'm not going to expand any energy on describing it right now, since we're about to do the whole movie. But basically, what you need to follow along at home is a copy of Mannequin 2, preferably the most recent DVD version. And now the version that we're watching, both of our versions, it opens with the MGM line roaring, and then you see the production company logo. And then at 17 seconds in, you see the first shot comes in from black, and it's a matte painting of a castle. So at 17 seconds in, folks, you should see the castle. And if not, well, you'll scroll and, find it in your movie and sync up with us. And it doesn't need to be an exact science. So here we go with Mannequin 2 on the move, the Alan Smithy commentary track. And we'll begin our movies in 3, 2, 1, begin.
All right, here we go.
Roar.
Leo the Lion.
Roar.
Poor Leo.
Poor Leo.
Of course, it was not a MGM release. It was a Fox release.
Oh, really?
20th Century Fox. Gladden released through 20th Century Fox. And here we've got the matte painting.
Once upon a time in the kingdom of Hauptmann Caning.
That's a joke. You're supposed to laugh at the name.
Well, I knew I was supposed to.
This matte painting, while it's not great, you can actually see that it, that one shot was just because they brought in horses from afar.
I'm gonna, the guy.
Yeah, oh, there's trouble.
Look at that zoom in. Oh, look at those. Look at them. Look at them.
Yeah.
Oh, we're in trouble here. All right.
I'm convinced this is shot at a state park somewhere.
I'm going to go ahead and call it that matte shot, most competent shot in the movie.
But,
All right.
Yeah, so this I'm convinced.
So here we go with some backstory. Now, this is Christy Swanson and William Ragsdale.
William Ragsdale of Fright Night, which I still have not seen.
Oh, Fright Night's a great movie, but I'm really sorry that you're going to have to see this, twice now? The third time before Fright Night?
This? I couldn't tell you how many times I've seen this. I don't even want to admit to it. I saw this opening night.
William Ragsdale, I mean, he had no problem slumming. He also did Fright Night 2, which most people don't even know exists.
Yeah.
Oh, and he was also in Frankenstein the College Years, which I remember seeing as a 5-year-old. Oh, and he was Herman in Herman's Head.
Yeah. He was,
wow.
He had a long relationship. He's on Justified. He's great. He's on Justified as this wormy accountant. Huh. Yeah. Christy Swanson's career did not recover, however.
No, the main thing I remember Christy Swanson from is as the girl who dies and is brought back from the dead in Wes Craven's Deadly Friend, which is one of his worst movies.
And that's what one of the interesting things about this is that the first one had recognizable cast in it. This does not have readily recognizable. I mean,
yeah.
Whether you liked him or not, Andrew McCarthy was very famous,
Right. Do you think this was written with McCarthy and Cattrall in mind? Obviously, it's about a mannequin, so, it couldn't have been another movie script that they wrote and then decided to call Mannequin 2. I mean, you know, they went through the trouble of getting a Hollywood Montrose back, which, you know, we'll meet up with him in a little bit. But, you know, if they were planning on getting Cottrell and McCarthy back, then, you know, why wouldn't it just be a continuation?
Right.
Why would they reboot it?
This makes absolutely no sense. So I think it had to be a reboot because they weren't coming back.
Yeah.
I assume they just weren't invited back. Neither of them were exactly, you know, at a peak in their career in 1990 or whenever they made this.
Yeah. But that was only like 3 years after Mannequin 1.
Yeah. And the thing is that unfortunately there isn't enough information on when this was actually produced, because the screenwriter, which is some of the backstory that I had that you mentioned, he talks about seeing it when it was finally released, which suggested that it was delayed somewhat. So if it had been immediately, I mean, Mannequin was a big hit. I looked it up. Mannequin made $43 million. It's the 87th best grossing romantic comedy, or 94th best grossing romantic comedy of all time, ahead of About a Boy, ahead of Pretty in Pink, ahead of other things that are actually popular, like 10 Things I Hate About You. Like, it did really well. And so if they rushed it into production, they might have been trying to capitalize on him post Fright Night 2, had it been a hit, and her post Deadly Friend, had it been a hit, but... Neither
I think
were.
I think this movie was trying to capitalize on Weekend at Bernie's more than anything.
See, that was the other thing I was thinking.
Because there's Bernie in the crappy witches, in the crappy witch's hat.
Yeah. Now, here's
awful mustache.
The greatest thing is that the mother in this, the evil queen,
yeah,
has the Jewish mother thing going.
Oh, yeah. Listen to her.
Which makes absolutely no sense in this context, but it makes even less sense once they get to the present.
Well, that's like the same sense of humor that opens it in the kingdom of, you know, Hogsborough caning.
Oh, that's right. It does. Yeah. Well, what
kind of name is caning? I mean, there was Walter Caning, and he played a Russian, right?
Yeah, but apparently this is Bavarian. Like, it looks like... The screenwriters say that they got the first draft, which is by the director
Hauptmann Caning,
who directed, who wrote the first one, and they rewrote it, and then they got the shooting script, which
oh,
they
this
said,
movie's got funny subtitles.
Yeah, they said they got the shooting script, which is even worse, and it had somebody else come in and rewrite it, and so, but the problem is that it the movie you're gonna see has these, like, Back to the Future type things with the actors playing related characters throughout the years, like Terry Kaiser right here in his...
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Oh, he's...
Yeah, I hate him already.
Yeah, no. The best thing about him in Weekend at Bernie's was that he didn't talk a lot.
He doesn't talk. I think it's funny, too, that he did Weekend at Bernie's two years after this, which starred Andrew McCarthy.
But was not produced by Gladden, because by that time the people who ran Gladden were in prison or had committed suicide on the way to prison. Yeah, Gladden produced like 8 or 9 somewhat memorable movies. Like, their logo was around a lot when you watched VHS movies in the late 80s, but they were criminals,
nice,
apparently.
Nice,
yeah, no.
Nice synthesized pan flute here.
Yeah.
Wait, so the original took place in Philadelphia too, right?
Yes.
Okay, well, that's a little continuity there.
I assume they got the same tax breaks, and they go back to the original department store.
They should do a Mannequin 3 in Philadelphia now and call it Mannequin 3 Killadelphia. You know, because it's got the high murder
does it,
crime.
I'm not entirely sure that Philadelphia is as nice as what we're seeing right now.
Well, no, even in 1990.
1991, yeah.
No, it's a bad place, folks. Sorry. Okay, so is that the same actress?
That is the same actress.
The mom, okay.
Yes. And now...
Wow. So yes. what kind of direction were these actors getting? Just play to the back row?
This is, I do not think the guy who directed this has directed anything else. He might have directed Mr. Nanny with Hulk Hogan. But now we've got the boring beginning. And what's sad about it is Mannequin had that great, you know, cartoon beginning that,
yeah,
you know, that was actually really competent. When he, like, shrugs his shoulders and the Q zooms over, that was competent. Yeah.
Well, yeah, you know, that was probably one of the more memorable things about Mannequin was the animated opening titles. And you can tell they're doing this on a smaller budget when they can't do that.
Yeah.
Because that's one of those things that doesn't necessarily require hiring back actors. Just get the same animator again, but they didn't do that. These fonts are – don't you fucking hate this font?
You get this font. You got this font with Windows.
Right, right.
That's how bad this font is.
This font's been in the opening titles of several hundred movies from the 90s because that was when they were doing more titles on computers, and this was just the font that came with them. This is like the font of Revenge of the Nerds 3 on Fox.
But then I think Penny Perry's a respectable casting director.
Oh, they have a little music.
Yeah, they have a little music thing. I thought that was cute. But nothing else. The editors don't have scissors.
Yeah, nothing else. But it's like, this movie's fun. Look at the credits. Look at the way they fly into pieces and they fly at you.
Yeah, William J. Kraber, Planet of the Apes production designer.
Oh, the original?
All of them.
Oh.
He did all six, I think. So he did the bad ones and the good ones.
There are no bad Planet of the Apes movies. Mm-hmm. Shame on you. Well,
now look at this. I mean, can you even believe this shot with this little old lady upset at him? It's just.
Yeah. Is this L.A. doubling as Philadelphia?
No, this isn't Philadelphia. It's the department store is somewhere. There it is. David Isaacs and Ken Levine. Ken Levine talks about it all the time on his blog.
It took four people to write this movie.
Yeah. Actually, Ken Levine started talking about Mannequin 2 on his blog because I gave him shit about it in like 2006 and he like referred to it. And now you have a returning cast member.
You're the king of pissing off irrelevant people.
He was happy to talk about it. He wasn't like Fred Decker. He was nice. He like had nice things to say. He's like, thank you for your question.
Yeah. So this is directed by Stuart Rayfill, who also directed the infamous Mac and Me.
Oh, did he? Okay. So this is the guy.
And the Ice Pirates. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, did he? Okay. That's the guy from the end of the first Mannequin. He still is working there.
Oh, more continuity.
Yeah.
But where's G.W. Bailey?
He didn't make it.
Switcher, you are one sick puppy. Switcher.
If there was one thing in this movie as funny as G.W. Bailey's outbreak in the first Mannequin, it'd be a masterpiece. There's nothing funny in this movie. He's starting work and he's wearing jeans.
Was that transition really necessary with the circle that irised out from the center of the screen?
I think they did that in the first one. That's more continuity.
Well, I mean, at least, there's kind of an attempt to match the mood of the first Mannequin.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same
sets. The first Mannequin opened with, driving through Philadelphia, and there's this really upbeat music, and wacky stuff is happening on the streets. So, I don't know.
But then there's this idiotic Stuart Patankin thing. But I think what's funny is that we're really getting way too much into the continuity of the two movies. Is that in the first one they were going?
Look, there's a mannequin.
There's a mannequin. That's the continuity. First mannequin. The store's open and they clearly are not doing well. But there's no conversation about that.
What doesn't make sense is if the girl in the prologue was turned into – I mean, mannequins didn't exist in medieval times. So like what did they think she had been turned in? They would have thought
she's
she
a statue.
A statue. But then, you know, she would have broken if she was made out of actual mannequin parts. It would have like decayed. Well, I guess she's like a magic mannequin. I don't know. Well, Kim Cattrall was turned into a mannequin in Mannequin 1 because of she was like in ancient Egypt, right?
No, she was sent through time into artist's work, and she just happened to inhabit his work. He was like the Jeff Koons of mannequins. right?
Oh, he was He was a mannequin maker.
Yeah, and so he was like Jeff Koon. So she inhabited his work. This is the actual frozen person is just you know, brought through time. But I like that the guy, William Ragsdale, is trying to interrupt his new boss while the boss is doing stuff. And so he's acting like he doesn't need the job. It's kind of funny.
Well, he's an irascible Bill Murray type. He is. You know, like he'll work at your job, but he's not going to do – Hollywood's
back.
So, all right. Where to start?
Hollywood's doing an African thing.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah, he didn't have the African garb in the first one.
When did In Living Color start?
I don't know.
In Living Color start
87, 88 probably. Oh, 90. Okay.
So I'm guessing
hence
we have the Fly Boys and Girls and Hollywood. this movie rips off. Well, I did actually like they make a Mahogany reference, like a Diana Ross movie reference in 1991. That's like 6 years too late. Yet it was actually an appropriate reference.
So you know what's ironic about Hollywood Montrose is that, like, you couldn't have this character now because he's too much of a swish.
Oh, yeah. Like, a flamboyant, gay.
Even though it's a gay guy playing a gay character.
You'd never have it.
Which at the time was considered progressive. Now it would just be too, you know, stereotypical.
Yeah.
I mean, if they remade this, which they should be, you know, next week or by the time that you're listening to this commentary track, he's going to be like a Queer Eye, you know, fashion makeover type. He's not going to be swishy. He's just going to be like, you know, smooth and confident and assertive and you know, RuPaulish, but not limp-wristed like Montrose's. Or they just won't include him at all because it's too problematic. You know what? Montrose is the one thing. Okay, so this movie used to come on Comedy Central a lot in the late 90s, and I always used to avoid it, which is why this is now the first time I'm watching the movie. But I think the reason I avoided it was that the one time I flipped across it, it was like a scene. They're near an ocean. This is going to happen later in the movie. And I guess like maybe Christy Swanson is drowning and Ragsdale has to chase after her. And Montrose is there and he goes, "Oh, where's Jacques Cousteau when you need him?" And that was like the line that made me avoid the movie every single time it came on afterwards.
That line does not – that pop culture reference is not on par of Diana Ross and Mahogany, unfortunately.
No.
And then you have this like sort of incompetent direction from Raphael. It's kind of funny. Like, it's technically not a bad shot, but it's like very bad composition.
Wow, look at his glasses, the scissors. Yeah. You could like fall on those and
die.
Scalp yourself.
Hold on,
at the very
we have
least.
Subplot coming. See, what I don't like is right now you can tell that the first one really fetishized the setting.
Right.
Like,
Yeah,
and it doesn't. It's the same set, but we're ignoring the whole grandiose feel of a department store. And it's like...
Oh, yeah, because this is the same feel of a department store. Yeah. Right, because in Mannequin 1, you have that, like, yuppie wet dream of running around the mall when nobody's there.
Right,
and not trying on the outfits. And
this does not have that.
No. I mean, it's not too late, but I'm taking your word for it that it doesn't at any point.
Well, what I actually was saying was that even more, the first one sort of tried to be a screwball comedy with the grandiose nature of 30s sets. This one is, you know, he was shooting down a little. It's very confined. It's like, even though you know they're on location, it's almost like there's no ceiling.
Right, they have the same location, you just can't cover it as much.
Yeah.
Well, at this point, Montrose is definitely more involved than he was in the first movie.
Yes.
Because he's driving the main character around. Does he ever mention the events of the first Mannequin?
It's referred to. And here's the scene you were just talking about. Look at how green it is. I really do like the the sort of really competent cinematography of 90s, 80s and 90s movies, except for that shot, of course, with the zoom and the
his fucking he should have his fucking zoom license revoked, Stuart Raffel.
Yeah, but I mean, just like, because they had to shoot on film, people needed to know what they were doing, as opposed to now, where in theory you could fix it all on video. Look at that guy's mustache.
I was just thinking, look at these guys with their hats.
Oh, you don't even know yet. These guys are Hans and Franz. They ripped off Hans and Franz for this.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah, it gets much worse.
Oh, no.
And
yeah, you know what
goes.
Else?
That didn't look like a real girl.
You know what else used to help these mediocre 90s comedies, and where's Jacques Cousteau when you need him? But what used to help them is just, you know, a little – spending a little bit of the budget on, you know, stuff falling over and getting destroyed. They used to make a lot of otherwise completely worthless comedies, you know, kind of watchable from the standpoint of a traffic accident. You know, like at the beginning of Maximum Overdrive, where the bridge opens and the cars are piling on top of each other.
Well, I mean, the thing is that...
Although Maximum Overdrive is about 50,000 times better than this.
This era of... Like, this getting a theatrical release...
Right.
That's kind of incredible when you think about it, and that happened a lot. I mean...
there's a nice insert shot of a swimming pool there. But yeah, we say that of a lot of movies that we watch on an Alan Smithy podcast. Like, wow, this was in theaters.
Oh, there you go. You think people sit and show this movie to people? And like, I was rowing in the background of that shot. Okay, so hold on. Here we go. Here
the
are you,
peasants
Hans and Franz.
There are too many stereotypes in this scene. Oh, there's three of them.
There's three of them. It's Hans and Franz and Jans. I mean, it's just...
William Ragsdale upholding the mantle of the straight... normal white guy. Everybody else in this movie is a freak.
Yep.
An ethnic freak.
See, there was your first reference you're looking for. Stranger things have happened.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So, both these movies take place in the same continuity.
Yeah.
So, there's
what happened to all the cast from before? They disappeared.
No, I wasn't wondering about that. I was just wondering about like how many other living mannequins there are in Mannequin World. Probably a lot. Oh my god.
Yep. Hold on. You got to realize, people, this is location shooting, you know, in the United States of America. Movies like this used to be made in the United States of America, not in Canada.
They said it couldn't happen here.
They had to, like, block off, you know, traffic for blocks to shoot this sequence of these three guys going into the dump truck.
And again, just the fact that they got some stuntmen to do that there. I'm not going to say that it made that scene tolerable, but it eased the pain a little, perhaps. Because they could have just cut, you know, when the dikes pulled up and stopped the dump truck, you know?
No, and I'm convinced this is one of the Ken Levine, David Isaac scenes, because it's a very, you know, the guy's very practical, so he's going to buy the girl's car insurance, and he just can't figure out why she's not touched. But, I don't know. That subplot's fine.
For a second, I thought the German guys were wearing the uniforms of the garbage truck workers, and it was implied that they had murdered them. But
nothing that interesting.
Nothing that funny.
I mean, but this is the era when Arnold Schwarzenegger was just the funniest
right,
thing.
So
yeah.
Austrian accent just equals comedy at this point.
I always have wondered if those are their real accents or if they just were dubbed in later.
I think they brought in bilingual Austrians to dub the voices at great expense.
Great expense.
In post-production.
But then this is still his first day at work, and you'll notice he's wearing different clothes. So he changed his pants, and we missed that scene, possibly in Stuart Raphael's director's cut. Only for Blu-ray, though.
So the necklace, if it comes off, she
wakes up.
Okay.
Now we're 23 minutes in, and, you know, we have not established this character in any way whatsoever, William Ragsdale, but he's now a total weirdo. In the first one, at least, Andrew McCarthy had the attachment that he spent 6 weeks working on.
Oh, yeah, that he made her.
And this
but
is
in this,
just, he's just a
this
weirdo.
This guy just likes kissing mannequins. He's the guy who G.W. Bailey thought that Andrew McCarthy was in the first movie.
And he was wrong.
Yeah. Wouldn't it be great if, I mean, another reason they should remake this now is that we've entered the era of real dolls.
I've been wanting to watch Lars and the Real Doll because it's got to have mannequin influence.
Right.
Lost.
Like the scene, like the scene where he nails her in a department store in the middle of the night. Remember that Twilight Zone episode about the mannequins who come alive in the middle of the night? And the one mannequin lady forgets that she's a mannequin, and they get 2 weeks to go be human, but she forgets that she's supposed to come back and be a mannequin?
No, I never saw it. It doesn't end well.
Oh, sure. I wasn't seriously asking you. I was doing my impression of Albert Brooks in Twilight Zone, the movie.
Oh.
Anyways, it was a good episode for
and
real.
Now here's the backstory where we just woke up a 1,000-year-old moron. Well, no, because she's from, you know, the 9th century or 11th century. Which way does it go? 1,000 years, 20th century.
She's from the 10th century.
She'd be an idiot. Okay. She's an idiot. So, like, there you go. That's who we're supposed to like is an idiot.
I'd better listen for a second.
Yeah, you don't want to miss.
I just want to hear if she's talking old-timey. Okay, she didn't come off as particularly intelligent there.
No.
You're right so far. Oh boy. Okay.
Yeah,
well, she's not talking old-timey. That's going to be a problem. I mean, like, what? This movie's already gone all the way with the silly accents, so why not have her talk like, you know, forsooth, doth doth be jester shoes. That was a necessary shot.
Well, it's to establish that Terry Kaiser's coming to visit.
Uh-huh.
So the first one, I guess you would say that the target audience for the first one was teenagers.
Yeah, I remember kind of talking to you about this in the episode where we watched Mannequin.
Yeah.
Like that Andrew McCarthy was kind of a teen heartthrob.
Oh, that's right, he was a teen heartthrob. So
teenage girls were Mannequin One's audience.
And apparently this is like 10-year-old girls. In fact, when I saw it in the theater, it was like a 10-year-old girl, her mom, and her little brother.
You didn't mention you saw this in the theater.
I saw it opening night.
What was wrong with you?
It was this or Robot Jocks.
And you didn't see Robot Jocks? Are you out of your fucking mind?
You say that now, but when we watch Robot Jocks, I bet I'll be proven about right.
I don't know. At least Robot Jocks is going to have stop-motion animation. Some Dave Allen action.
This has
some Bernie action. It's not really comparable.
You haven't gotten to that yet.
When that one German guy walked away, you could tell that like the costume designer like came in to make sure that it was clinging his buttocks just right, so that it would be really funny when you saw his butt as he walked away.
No, I'm convinced that they cut things out of this that cut down the risque factor. I'll bring that up later.
Well, what kind of risque factor? Like German buttocks or Christy Swanson's tits.
Like German package in Hollywood's face, and he keeps looking at it but never comments on it. Yeah. And they keep like cutting reaction shots.
For a second I thought you meant like in the institution of Hollywood's face, like bulging German packages right in Hollywood's face, man. But no, you meant Hollywood Montrose.
Yeah, you missed that they've like stolen this. Basically, Hollywood and this and William Ragsdale have stolen this priceless necklace, and they don't think anything about it. So now we're out on the street in
yeah, and you know it's Philadelphia because they've got souvlaki restaurants.
But the thing is that this never would have happened in the first one because you never had the mannequin interact with another human being. Like that,
right.
That was like the payoff is when she did.
Right, and G.W. Bailey is all flustered. Oh, man, it's making me want some souvlaki. I hate this music. This is like first date in the 80s music.
Right. Oh, wait, and this is just get ready. Look at those hair extensions. I mean, like, how much must that have weighed?
Hey, you know.
That must
80s,
have weighed a lot of, like, that must the, have weighed like 3 pounds.
In the 80s, an actor's salary was determined by the volume of their hair. So she doesn't know not to eat paper.
Right.
Because she's from medieval times.
Right.
Makes sense.
So he's like, he's a moron, too.
Right. He's not at all amazed at the fact that this
suspended animation. It's Rip Van Winkle, right? It's Forever Young with Mel Gibson, except
he's just like, hey, you want to come over to my place? I got cable,
right? HBO, HBO.
He's like Judge Reinhold in Gremlins, trying to pick up on Phoebe Cates.
There you go, betrothed. There's a 10th century word for you.
She looks naked under that leather jacket.
Just wait. So what we have to believe about this scene is that he saw the horse, decided he was going to use the horse in his romantic comedy pun, and gave it a name and led into it. But what if she hadn't asked? Then he wouldn't have had to go to the horse.
And she loves it. Whoa.
Yeah, that's Hollywood with pom-poms.
Setting back the old gay rights movement.
Yep.
One swish at a time. Okay, here we go. Yeah, he's like staring at them.
Yep. Look at those sunglasses. They're... Yeah, you just get the feeling that they cut reaction comments from Hollywood actually being gay.
Yeah, sure. Now, who does that guy remind me of? I mean, I know he's Bernie, but something about his outfit, it's like, I don't know.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I can't think of it.
It's like his costume is based on some villain from the 30s or 40s.
Mm-hmm.
Like, especially with the cape. It's got a little bit of, like, Hans Zaroff.
Yeah. This is actually good with the mole. I like this. Look at that. It's pretty funny. But then you've got a terrible performance from Terry Kaiser ruining it. He was awful on Night Court, too.
He looks a little like the guy in The Most Dangerous Game.
He does. He does look a little like the guy from Most Dangerous Game.
Who hunts people on his jungle island for sport. Hollywood Montrose, you know what's sad is like when actors look about 10 years older in a movie that they've done only a few years later. I mean, I think the guy who played Hollywood Montrose probably, you know, got famous off the first mannequin, and then he his food budget increased, and now he's got this double chin that wasn't there in Mannequin 1.
Now, he was on the Golden Girls, and I'm always wondering he would have been on the Golden Girls at the same time as this. I don't know if he was on the whole... Or no, he was on Designing Women. God, I can't even remember that decade. Designing Women ran from 86 to 93, and he was on it the whole time. So the entire... Oh, and we just had the whole thing where somebody says something under their breath and it's changed to something else.
I hate comedies where, like, the costume design is supposed to be the funniest thing about it. So that, you know, even while the jokes are sucking, you know, as long as you have the actors standing around looking ridiculous, it'll come off as funny, right?
Right.
Was that?
No, it wasn't.
Yeah, was it?
It wasn't.
That erotic?
No.
It was, but that was like
shoe
a
shop. No, it was just shoe shop.
But it was called Fetishes.
I know it wasn't though. Okay, those two people who walked by, their story is more interesting than this one. No, you missed when the cars drove away from the airport. It was sped up photography. Ooh. Like, yeah. Okay, and now we've got a cameo coming. Here we
again,
go.
Is she wearing anything under that leather jacket? And who are these minstrel acts?
Hold on. Who's the doorman?
Is that John Big Booty from Buckaroo Banzai?
Nope.
Was he in Mannequin 1?
He was in Mannequin 1. He's even in Mannequin 2 twice.
Oh, it's...
It's Hollywood. But...
Whoa.
Yeah.
Why? Man, fucking Hollywood man Montrose made a killing on this movie. Probably retired afterwards.
Because she'd get all these comments, and she wouldn't be freaking out about a Moor talking to her.
Like, yeah, a Moor. And he's really, even this version of Hollywood is big on the African thing. He's got that necklace.
Yeah. Well, it was 1991. It was post In Living Color.
Right. Post African Pride.
That was funny, though, when he's giving the woman shit about wearing taffeta. I like that. Oh, look at the hair. Oh, my God.
Yeah,
it's 1991.
The kid haircut of Kid in Play.
Again. Right behind William Ragsdale. I wonder if William Ragsdale's proud of that haircut that he has in this.
Yeah. His haircut is kind of how, like, every guy in the 80s must have looked just rolling out of bed.
Because she would know how to use a toilet, too.
Yeah. Well, wouldn't it be funny if she were given blow in this scene instead of the lipstick?
Yep.
And she thought it was like magic fairy dust because she's from stupid times.
And I like how I get the peace logo had just made its comeback in the 90s. It was a hip thing.
Yeah,
91 still. Is that orange? Kind of colorblind.
No, I think
okay.
It's
that's
right.
A jump cut. That's not right. Nice transition there. Now we're driving around. That's a sped up shot. Sorry.
You got a better eye for that than I do.
Oh my God. I hate Terry Kaiser so much.
His chin goatee looks like a Brillo pad that was fashioned to his face. Damn Mediterranean,
I mean,
types with their curly hair.
The thing is that in the first one, James Spader was every bit as absurd as Terry Kaiser is in this, but in the first one they knew to make fun of him. Like, it was a joke. In this one, it's just Terry Kaiser's, like, thing.
I just noticed Christy Swanson was in Flowers in the Attic.
Yes.
You ever see that?
No.
Oh, it's great. It's it's awful, but it's genuinely unsettling at the same time.
I know about the books, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they can't go.
Oh, God, she has a professional website that's been updated this year.
Who, Swanson?
Yes.
Well, you know, her career is still going. Looks like she was just in an episode of Psych.
She's on Criminal Intent, but I don't remember that at all. Oh, yes, I do. She played friggin' Anna Nicole Smith she played an Anna Nicole Smith stand-in on Criminal Intent. She's just in Swamp Shark with D.B. Sweeney, also a survivor of the 1980s.
That has to be a sci-fi movie.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, she wasn't really in anything to be in, you know, to be recognizable in this.
William Ragsdale's Dance.
This is what I'm wondering. Was that supposed to look good? Like,
yeah.
If you were in the 1991, if you were a 23-year-old white guy, is that how you really danced?
He's doing the fucking moves from Say, Say, Say.
The other thing is the soundtrack. The first one had a budget for the soundtrack. Like, you recognize the artists. You don't miss. Okay, here's your retro thing. Of course, there's your retro thing. That guy behind in the hat. Oh, God.
How come everybody stops and just starts watching them and imitating her?
Is he going to be in it again? I swear to God, it's Titus Welliver from, all sorts of shows.
Whoa, look at those girls.
Yeah, what's going on there?
Those look like actual people who were hired for this movie.
No, the guy in the white hat's gone. I bet it's Titus Welliver. No, it's that guy. That's not Titus Welliver.
Man,
we're 42 minutes in. Like,
wow,
okay, here we go.
This is just blowing by.
Yeah.
You know, my observation
what
about
a terrible edits. Oh my God. Okay, I'm sorry. Continue.
My observation about the fashion at this time is that, it was really bad, and the reason it was so bad is because it was as 80s as the 80s were going to get before people started wearing flannel and tearing their jeans open.
Right. I mean, you have to realize that a year after this, Singles came out, right? Like, Singles was 92.
Right, right. Like, so, we're on – this movie was made the year that Nirvana made their impact on the culture. So this is, like, critical mass of gaudiness here.
Right. I mean, you never would have had white people and black – a white girl and a black girl, like, giving each other thumbs ups 2 years later. That's just crazy. What are you talking about?
What's going on? Oh, the mom owns
the
a video.
Mom, yeah, and he's there, and
which is what Singles was about, right?
Yes.
Video dating.
Yes, yeah. And it's not developed.
This is the most cutting edge thing in the movie.
Why is she wearing a coat inside?
Because she's going out to flash people later.
Uh-oh. Okay. So,
do you think that actor is gay, this guy?
Stuart Patinkin? I don't know.
You say that like I should know who Stuart Patinkin is.
I had one of my theme week, well, you know, all the freaking stop button posts for a week.
It looks like he's just Stuart Pankin also.
Pankin, sorry. Maybe so. They're all, and I'm looking, oh God, he was the dad on Dinosaurs. No way.
Oh. Yeah, it looks like he's done a lot of
with a kid, yeah.
Done a lot of cartoon voices. But
he
I'm not seeing
a master's degree in theater.
I'm not seeing anything that I would actually remember him from.
No, he's in drag and something.
No, he's just done a lot of you just saw him in Arachnophobia because he was
so
Sheriff Lloyd Parsons.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't recognize his
Canadian
face.
Yeah.
Vaguely Canadian.
But he's not. He's from Philadelphia. He's a hometown boy in this. Wow. So, all right. You know, there you go. He was at work. He saw his boss. He didn't see his boss, but the boss saw him. Subplot. In a movie with absolutely no subplots whatsoever, at, you know, 42 minutes, they sort of hint that they're going to have this one. Wait, is that coat part of her outfit? Because it matches her skirt. Did they even credit the... Okay, so what kind of grown man has a poster of Philadelphia? And then let's look at...
Yeah, this is like a college dorm set.
And then over in the thing, he has little figurines up on the wall.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wait, hold on. We're going to get some backstory here. I forgot. We get some backstory for him here.
How come in the 80s women's fashion was indistinguishable from hookers? I mean, that's a rhetorical question. You don't have to answer that.
But there you go. The reason he's so fucked up is because his dad died when he was a kid.
And that's why he fucks mannequins.
Right, that's why he kissed a mannequin. And then we just got like the first tragic moment of the movie, which it should be filled with. Her freaking little sister's dead. Her freaking little sister has been dead for 980 years.
Oh, I forgot about that in the zoom shot at the beginning.
Yes, and so first... like. She's happy though. She's totally okay. You know, she's happy.
Well, she's in 1991 Philadelphia. Who wouldn't be?
Why didn't they show the scene where he showed her how to put on nail polish? Is what I want to know. He's like, this is the way I do it. You can do it this way too.
That's not a creepy line.
No, not at all. I mean, that's the problem. I'm
never going to leave you alone.
He's at this point, you know, creeping out on a.
He's creeping. He's creeping her out to on an inter. He's breaking the time barrier.
There you go. Okay, so she's dancing to music that she's not hearing, and he's dancing to music that he's not hearing, and they're dancing in unison.
Oh, look, he puts the sausages in the toaster. Huh, he's like Cobra.
But this is like, that's an 80s thing.
Jesus Christ with the montages.
Look at this. He's doing the whole 80s thing where you do crazy stuff in the kitchen.
I think this might be the worst 80s montage I've ever seen.
What's scary is, I was like, does that egg thing work? Would that be a good idea?
I thought for a second that this movie was going to try to be sexy because she's in the bubble bath, but...
It's not. It's playful because it's for 12-year-olds. Okay, it's football 1988. I bet this was supposed to come out in 89. I bet this was a fast-ass sequel.
Yeah.
McCarthy didn't have to do it because he was in Weekend at Bernie's, and that was
a dustbuster.
Yeah.
This is so 80s.
But it's a kitchen dustbuster. It's a kitchen dustbuster. Okay, so they brought that with them. Even though we have not seen it before, they brought it with them. Your film stock quality changed so they could do an effect shot. And the mother, again, wearing a coat or a shirt over her business. There you go. She has kind of that salt. Okay, continue.
she has kind of a Ronnie Blakely vibe. You know, like a Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah.
She should be getting ready to tell William Ragsdale that, you know, Freddy can't hurt him because mommy killed him. Okay, so now we're finally going to have a scene like one in Mannequin One where someone's like, oh, you got a new girlfriend, huh? Let me meet her. And then she's a mannequin. It took this movie a long time to get to that.
Yes, it did. A very long time. Okay, here, backstory. Oh, no, not yet. Okay.
She hasn't heard of Prince William?
Well, why this idiot would think that, you know, somebody in the 10th century... Okay, here's the thing.
What?
You can't...
That was his reaction?
Yes. He thinks it's a joke because he's actually insane.
Clearly. Don't you remember what happened the last time? Dumbbell, take off the necklace.
Right. No, he doesn't. He's stupid.
you think he'd be overjoyed that, you know, she's back to her more attractive form that he prefers.
I think he might kiss her to wake her up. He's performing CPR. Oh, look, there's a castle in that poster. Is that some sort of tie-in to his royal lineage? And then his mother. How old is he supposed to be? Is he a college graduate?
Yeah, but
and here
I don't
we
know.
Go. Here we go. So what does he choose to do with this mannequin?
Oh boy.
He takes it out into public and acts like she's real.
Look at this. Look at all the extras.
Do you think William Ragsdale's picture is on the wall at that restaurant or was?
Rolling their eyes.
Like in 1991?
We should do like a tour of Mannequin where we go around Philadelphia and get killed by gang members trying to visit the locations.
Or even better, we could get gang members to escort us. That would make it. That's a wonderful documentary. That's great. Comedy Central should pay us to do that.
Yeah, or at least pay Hollywood Montrose to revisit
Philadelphia.
Hollywood
Montrose could be the tour guide.
Yeah,
for scenes that he's not in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hollywood.
That's a great idea. Is there like an info at comedycentral.com or something? So now we have like a scene that has nothing to do with the main story. It has to do with old boy security guard and his love life problems. Like
I kept just thinking, like, I don't even, you know, remember assistant security guard from Mannequin 1. Why did they bother the expense of bringing him back?
He was a janitor. He was the janitor at the end.
Oh, he's been like promoted now.
He's been promoted.
Gay guys can't stop making over straights. It's their calling. Ugh, all right, I just started hating him.
I like Stuart Patinkin's look of shock, though. Because if this were serious, that would be very bad to say to someone.
Yeah. Look at the one German guy's headband. And
yeah, I know. You gotta like that headband. He actually looks like Arnold. But then
hey,
you know that he's not in.
I wonder if he was Austrian.
The editing of this is just terrible. Like, he's watching the conversation as it happens, but then in the cuts, he's not. Just terrible editing. Okay, so we are now 50 minutes in, so we have passed the halfway mark by only 2 minutes, unfortunately.
All right, well, let's not, you know, a watched pot never boils. I'm not sure what to say about this.
Why are they scared of him? There's what I'll say of it. Like, what the hell? He's some, you know.
Oh no! You know who Bernie reminds me of? He reminds me of Sardou in Bloodsucking Freaks, the guy who tortures women by like playing darts on their back and stuff. I mean, but that's a trauma movie. But yeah.
Okay, so we just found out that William Ragsdale dressed the mannequin in a teenage girl dress.
But it's a hooker dress.
A hooker teenage girl dress.
Oh.
So, I mean, that's like...
It's from our Angel line.
Yeah, that's like two levels of kind of weird there.
Yeah.
Or is it like Supergirl where she's supposed to be a teenager, yet, you know...
I don't know. I've never seen Supergirl.
Yeah, in Supergirl, she's supposed to be like 15, but she's not.
It's just hard to say, like, what's there more of in this scene? Unfunny accents or unfunny costumes?
Hmm.
They're almost
unfunny
costumes
because unfunny costumes because all the unfunny accents have unfunny costumes too, and then right. Hollywood's got an unfunny costume.
Here comes the scene where.
Hold on. He has the same problem that Williams Ragsdale has, except he can keep it in. He's only going to kiss her hand, not her lips, like William Ragsdale.
Well, I was just going to say this is probably the scene where he and Ragsdale double team the mannequin.
Yeah,
and then as they're double teaming it, the necklace falls off, and it's like, what?
And they get
what
really
disappointed. What are you doing? they lose their boners.
Ugh. What I find amusing is that Terry Kaiser's performance is this like Austrian count. Uh-huh. Is like half Mae West and half like bad 30s Japanese stereotypes. It's nothing Austrian about it. Now he's like thinking he's insane. But this is his second day at work. You're forgetting. This wow. is his second day at work.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Wow. All that stuff
yeah.
that they were doing yeah. was all in one night.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. I almost thought it was like a montage of their relationship yeah. over the weeks. Her mannequin, the Christy Swanson mannequin, is a little too real looking. I mean, I don't remember Kim Cattrall's mannequin being as realistic looking.
I don't think this one's functional. If you look at the arms, you can't move.
No, there's no joints or of movement.
No, it's very weird. And it has nail polish, too. Nobody noticed that? They were like, wow, it's got nail polish now. This priceless relic from the 10th century has no... Has, you know.
Yeah. Are her breasts as a mannequin smaller than are as a person?
Or vice versa. And then you have Mishash Taylor putting on the...
Is he going to turn into a mannequin?
He is.
Oh, cool.
But he didn't turn around when he heard that. How convenient.
Wait, how come he can't see her?
Because she looks like a mannequin. Duh. She isn't moving. If somebody doesn't move...
But she is moving. Look at her. And I... What?
Taxi driver. There you go. There you go. So clearly the mannequin knows the necklace does it, but she doesn't tell William Ragsdale.
Wait, no, she doesn't because she put the necklace back on. That's why she got mannequinized
again. But she
again.
Just saw that Mishash Taylor had it happen.
Okay, so now she knows, yeah.
Okay. Look at these hats. Aren't they great?
Yeah, more costume design hilarity.
I've noticed that the mole hair actually changes in
I was just noticing
thickness.
That, too.
Yeah, it changes in thickness.
Well, I barely noticed it before. I guess they realized that it wasn't reading on screen when they watched the dailies for this. I know, the dailies. Did you know that they were halfway through the shooting of Mannequin 2 when they realized that the original actress who was playing Christy Swanson's part just wasn't like working out? And Stuart Raifel insisted that they halt production and reshoot the entire half of the movie that they had already done with Christy Swanson with this new actress. And it was this huge scandal, and you know they went way over budget, but they reshot like half the entire movie just to bring Christy Swanson in. And you know that just goes to show that when you have the director of Mac and Me behind your project, you better expect a perfectionist's touch.
Are you serious?
No.
Okay. I was like, what? And
yeah,
would
no.
be like, and that actress was Meryl Streep.
I know. I wish I'd thought of that.
That was good, though. I was like, wait, what? Really? Yeah, you can be like, it was
it's
Jodie
like, no,
Foster.
No,
Jodie
don't
Foster.
Worry. It's like no, don't worry. You still know way more about this movie than I ever have.
We should have totally just pretended that Jodie Foster did this after Silence of the Lambs. See, there's the shot. There you go. Okay, so Hollywood right next to the package, and he keeps looking at it, but there's no comment or acknowledgement of the dong right there. Yeah, because Hollywood can't actually be actively gay. He's got to be passively gay. Well, in the first one, he had a dude. In this one, he doesn't even have a dude. And the mole's different. The mole's different. I gotta say, the makeup artist on this, not very good. Can't get the mole right. Okay, and here...
Hey, a castle. What?
Yeah, it's present day, and I believe that's the mother again, but she doesn't get a close-up or anything. Or not. I mean, it's unclear if that's...
This looks like footage spliced in from a full moon movie. You know, like one of the ones that they would shoot in Romania or something. Subspecies.
Subspecies 5.
Yeah.
Actually, I think there was a subspecies. It's a department store that sells liquor. Do they do that? That's cool. Really? But now he's complaining about something smelling like toe jam, and he's, like, physically disgusting. So that doesn't make any sense. That if he's aware that something can smell like toe jam, yet he's not aware of his mole hair. Terry Kaiser, of course, was famous for being the annoying reporter on Night Court, where he wasn't amusing either.
I've never seen Night Court, but for some reason I know about the actors who were in it because they would show up in 80s movies like, you know, Bull the Bailiff was in House.
Right, yeah, no, I think the only one who never did a movie was Harry Anderson. I don't think he ever tried it. Kind of like...
And then I know that John Larroquette did the opening narration of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Pre-Night Court, of course.
Well, sure, about 10 years at least. So it looks like Stuart Rayfield also directed Tammy and the T-Rex.
Really?
Which used to come on USA Up All Night and also has Terry Kaiser. It also has George Buck Flower, who, you know, John Carpenter fans will recognize as a guy who usually plays bums.
Okay,
and,
so...
Yeah.
Wow, I mean, he still works.
Yeah, no, actually, his most recent movie actually, like, is considered, like... I think it's on its way to being discovered as, like, you know, an insanely bad cult classic because it's... It's called Standing Ovation, and it's about, like, some Disney Channel-type girls who, you know, form a singing band, and then they take their act straight to the top in a singing contest. And you watch the trailer, and it's just like – it's like Rebecca Black the movie, practically. We should watch that
for
a track or an episode or something.
Definitely. Philadelphia Experiment.
You know what?
Philadelphia Experiment. Isn't that the one Carpenter wrote the script to, and then –
Wait, Stuart Rayfield didn't direct Philadelphia Experiment,
did
he?
Yes, he did. And Carpenter executive produced it. Carpenter was going to direct Philadelphia Experiment. Oh, crap. I've been ignoring the movie. Carpenter was going to direct Philadelphia Experiment.
Look at this. Yeah, you're right. I mean, Philadelphia Experiment's kind of a well-known movie, too.
Yeah.
This Philadelphia Experiment was probably the height of Stuart Rayfield's career.
Yeah. No,
You know what? I know I was ignoring the movie too, but I wanted to say in the last scene where I think Bernie was talking to – oh, no, it was the girl. She was talking to a guy in glasses and a bow tie.
Yeah.
I wanted to say regarding that guy, it's sort of like they wanted Paul Bartel, but they couldn't afford him.
Right.
Okay.
Now here you have your antics in the department store that you were missing.
Swanson. Right.
Yeah. Hold on. But there's a break.
Yeah, suddenly.
Well, it's the 80s, so we have to do the women's beauty shop scene because.
Suddenly we're in another scene.
Because women's beauty shop was always a good joke.
It's like she just stepped into another dimension, and that's how she got away from the Germans. And another montage.
There you go. You wanted montages. So Stuart Rayfield's actually British.
Really?
Yeah, and his father.
Wonder he brings such a touch of class to these movies.
Yeah.
And his father was a Nazi collaborator.
Mac and Me. I've never seen Mac and Me, but Stuart Raythel wrote Mac and Me.
Oh, wow. That's awful. I mean, not that I'm surprised. Ugh, enough of these upbeat 80s songs about it following your dreams. God.
Okay, and now we get to... I think his costume has changed since the last scene. Which makes you wonder if they actually had, like, the Kevin Smith mentality. That Shannon Doherty's costume changed in every scene of Mallrats because she's at the mall. Regardless of the fact it takes place over 3 hours. Like, that was his joke.
Oh. Yeah. Are you reminded of that because we're in a mall?
No, I'm reminded of it because his costume did change.
Oh, because of the lack of continuity.
Yeah. This is probably like supposed to be 6 months after the last scene in the original cut. There was a unicorn originally in the original cut where he was dreaming and there was a unicorn and then...
For real?
No.
Oh.
It was my Blade Runner joke.
Oh, haha, I get it now, yeah.
But then you have someone committing assault and attempted murder with witnesses, and what's going to happen? Yeah. Nothing. But that's why this one has, like, the, you know, 10-year-old sensibility. Like, this is for somebody who, you know, that morning watched Rescue Rangers before she went to school.
Yeah. He hates these cans! Is that a reference to the mannequin one? We're going to split up?
No. And then there was just like a black joke.
Okay, music.
Kind of weekend
not...
at Bernie's music there, though.
Music not really matching the urgency of the danger.
Well, no, because...
Why is he throwing
pots at
him?
That was actually good sound looping. Did you hear that? That was actually William Ragsdale, huh? Even though that wasn't him in the first shot. That was good sound looping.
Why is he throwing pots at him if he still has more bows in his arrow? Or he has more arrows in his bow.
He's from Bavaria.
Wow, Germans are dumb.
Yeah. The amusing part of that is they just said that clothes were still made in America in this. Ah, 1990.
Yeah, she looks like... Right now, she looks like Bridget Nielsen in Beverly Hills Cop 2.
And now we're going to get some antics. More antics.
Oh, finally, we're running around a mall.
So the interior design of this place has really fallen off since Switcher left, if you haven't noticed. Including the fact that they just knocked over the same lingerie display twice in like 3 minutes.
Hmm.
Stunt people...
I know it's barely worth pointing out, but she wouldn't know how to drive a car.
No. No, she wouldn't. Do they even have the wheel in 10th century Europe? I mean, yeah, right? But not for that kind of implementation. Not for a steering implementation.
You know, at that point, you know, horse carriages were still kind of the, you know, the latest thing.
And there's this wonderful...
costume changes.
Right. Well, they're in a mall. And they just ran down that staircase twice. I think this
Switcher.
Is recycling footage.
How great would it be if G.W. Bailey just ran out from somewhere just for 2 seconds to yell Switcher and then, like, ran back and never was seen again? I'm definitely noticing the sped-up footage this, you know, at this point. Like when she crashed through the window.
Yeah. Is that the same cop? No. Sadly, no. That's got to be a location in Philadelphia. There you go.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
What's going on here is the guy stole a suit of armor from the store, and you're not upset at him, is what's going on here. So we also see here that the mother has a car with a heart on the side. So her outfit's changed and her hair has changed.
She had time to dress up like Kelly Bundy between here and the mall.
Still with the makeup there, or isn't the nail polish there.
Yeah.
Oh, but isn't she did sad? Go to the beauty shop, so.
Isn't it sad that, like, Zach Galligan never even had, like, half the career that William Rex did?
That is really tragic. The fact that Zach Galligan never caught on.
I know. If I went gay, Zach Galligan circa Gremlins, or even Gremlins 2. What a man.
Waxwork. We should do a waxwork episode.
Yeah. What a strong, likable leading man who never did anything.
Never even had a TV show.
Yeah.
He never even had Herman's Head.
But you look at, he never even had, how come it wasn't Zach Galligan stars in Herman's Head? And, you know, speaking of waxwork, I mean, the two movies kind of have something in common in that, like, the second movie involves time travel and then. In this one, she's traveling through... Ah, forget it.
Yeah. The TV actually zeroed out. So in that scene, it was established that the mother had met her. We sort of missed
that. That's convenient.
But hold on. It's going to be revoked here in a second. In the most believable police intrusion into a household since, you know...
Silent Night, Deadly Night 2.
Where's their warrant? Why are these people allowed in the house? I think at least they should have done the Lethal Weapon 2 thing where he was like, diplomatic immunity!
Right, right.
As opposed to, you know, just this... I mean, but this, it's cartoon logic. It's like a cartoon. If this were, you know, a cartoon...
Yeah.
Okay, so...
Uh-huh.
He at least likes her when she's a real person and not just a mannequin.
Sorcerer.
It's like Highlander, almost. Not really. It's more like Back to the Future. It borrows a lot from Back to the Future in this whole, like... So she clearly knows about it, and she didn't tell William Ragsdale who could have taken it.
That's good. Just zoom in on the bridge of her nose.
Wouldn't his teeth be worse? They should have messed up his teeth a little.
I would have been horrified at that point if I were you watching this movie in theaters when they give that big close-up to Bernie.
I have no recollection of the event other than that occurred. And
that there was a 10-year-old and her mom in the audience with you?
And the little brother. Which is better than when I saw Weekend at Bernie's, when I think it was a bum. It was a sleeping drunk bum. When I saw Weekend at Bernie's 2.
And that bum was George Buck Flower.
So the mother forgot that she saw the real person.
Did she just faint?
Yeah, she fainted.
I wish Stuart Patankin would just come out of the closet already. Look at him. Looks like he dates Glenn Shadix.
Switcher! Jabber, jabber, jabber!
I can't believe there's 20.
Okay, the cops just left these people in someone's house.
Yeah.
Can you imagine the lawsuit? That's why Philadelphia is a dump now, is because the city has no money. Because after the events of Mannequin 2, the city was bankrupted in the lawsuits.
Yeah, they never recovered after the Mannequin 2 riots of 91.
And now here's the best part is that Terry Kaiser, we discover, is actually supposed to be sexy. Just wait for it.
What was that? Are they disappointed that they have to kidnap a girl and not a hot guy?
Yeah, that's never really dealt with. Probably in the director's cut. But here you go, Terry Kaiser. He's actually Cary Grant. He's not some moly guy. Yeah, there you go.
Mom fainted again.
Because Terry Kaiser kissed her. She probably now has, like, mushrooms growing out of her hand.
This movie's abominable.
Okay, here we go.
I can't believe they wouldn't just show Dr. Katz reruns instead of this.
Yeah, I can't believe – well, that's what Ken Levine said is that they only took credit because their agent assured them they get residuals. And he's like, it premiered on a major network. It premiered on one of the big three. And it showed on Comedy Central for years. And he's like, and I never saw a cent because the producers were in federal prison.
Yeah. Here's another montage.
Yep. Well, it's a memory montage. It's kind of like Saving Private Ryan. He would not have seen that. He wouldn't have seen that from that angle. No.
Fall back. Fall back.
Was I a good man?
Do you copy?
Was I a good man? Tom Hanks dies in Saving Private Ryan if you hadn't seen it. It's really stupid. Continuing. Oh, and it ties in perfectly to this scene.
Tom Hanks also dies in Philadelphia, just to tie it to this movie.
There you go.
Oh, my God.
He also dies in Splash. The mermaid eats him.
oh, no. Is he doing a L. Lee Ermey from
yes.
Full Jacket?
Yes, he is.
Oh, jeez.
So this is, like, kind of a problem is I never realized that, like, a leathery gay guy was known as Butch. That doesn't seem – that's like a gay – that's like a lesbian thing to be Butch. It's not a, like, gay thing to be Butch, right? Am I wrong?
I think gays of either gender can be Butch as long as they're, you know, tough.
Okay, so it does – okay, so this does not break – reality here.
No, I mean, I'm sure, like, Montrose was, like, the homosexuality consultant on the movie, so they wouldn't have messed that up.
Okay. And we did confirm Mischa's Taylor's gay, right?
He'd better be. He'd better not be, like, the gay guy in Revenge of the Nerds who isn't actually. I love that you're checking his IMDb right now to see
if
he's
gay. I'm actually checking Wikipedia to see if he's gay.
But yeah, it's not like a...
Dude. He's straight.
Is he? Isn't he? Ah, boo.
He's straight with 4.5 kids or something.
Ugh.
So he clearly was not the gay consultant on this.
Now, that makes me mad because, like, how many gay black guys must there be in Hollywood auditioning for these parts? And they give it to the straight gay black – I mean the straight black guys. The straight gay black guys.
Okay, so we just witnessed an escape from a major police station in the 1990s. Like, you know –
that was
Lethal Weapon 3 needed assault rifles to do that scene, and they just needed straight gay Hollywood.
And mom in a wow, that was a fancy transition with the curtains.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's because it's the scene of the inexplicable
fancy to do at the mall.
Yeah, at the department
store. Oh, we are at the mall, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
The arches. I almost thought it was a museum for a second.
I mean, the problem with this is that, you know, the whole idea that a department store would have this sort of grandeur about it anymore.
Yeah.
They need to work toward it. The first one at least worked toward it. This one doesn't work toward it.
Hmm. You ever seen Chopping Mall?
No.
It's got a really good head explosion.
What if
I mean, otherwise it's the usual Jim Wynorski nonsense, but...
What if they remade this but mixed it with Dawn of the Dead?
I just rewatched Dawn of the Dead not too long ago with my girlfriend, and it was really depressing, number one, because I had to explain to her how zombies didn't always used to run, and second, that the 70s mall looks even more dated now. I mean, you could kind of watch Dawn of the Dead in the 90s, and it still felt like it was some kind of mall, but now it's like another planet. Malls have changed so much.
You know what to remake this? Wes Anderson.
Yeah, you know, because he's kind of into the pageantry of costumes and set design and stuff, and
Bill Murray could be Terry
and
Kaiser.
Bill Murray. Yeah, I was just thinking that. Yeah, and he could be not funny also, and people would praise him for his brilliance.
Yeah. I don't know. Bill Murray does better in Wes Anderson movies than he does in anything else.
Well, okay, that's true. Hollywood, what are you doing? Take the necklace off of her.
Yeah, knowing that Mishas Taylor's straight just makes this whole thing uncomfortable.
Right, because now it's like
it's inappropriate. Yeah.
Right, now he's playing the swishy gay guy almost, and it's almost like mockery.
Yeah.
It would be one thing if that's kind of close to the way he was, but...
But no.
No.
Not at all. He's the doorman.
Right. He's the doorman.
Look at this. Look at that. That was a fake Zoom.
That was horrifying.
Freaking 1991. That was awful. Awful.
That was the kind of Zoom where, you didn't even do it in camera. You just took a piece of the film and blew it up multiple times. Until it got all grainy.
For some reason, this reminds me of Scream 2. Well, no, just because it's unbelievable that this is an actual production. So in a 120-year-old department store, this is what their theater looks like. I don't believe that. Looks like a storage room. And now we've got the Fly Girls.
Oh, and Bernie is disappointed because it's too ethnic for him. I mean, urban ethnic.
Urban ethnic. Yeah, not really ethnic.
Not Eastern Europe ethnic.
We also should have started the rumor that Jennifer Lopez was one of the Fly Girls in this, too. Because wasn't she one of the Fly Girls?
Yeah, on In Living Color.
Yeah, we could have been like, that's Jennifer Lopez over there, and Jodie Foster was originally in half this, but she was just terrible.
Oh, wow, Montrose is rapping. He is like Lamar in Revenge of the Nerds.
Yep.
We're Lambda, 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 and Omega Mu. We've come here on stage tonight to do our show for you. Ooh, man, that...
Yeah.
I like how the editor's not just incompetent, he's creative.
Mm-hmm. And another one of those great non-optical zooms. What do you even call that? Would that be a process zoom? Because now it'd be a...
Yeah.
It would be software, but... And be pre-software, what'd they call it?
What's with the descending spaceship?
It's, the freaking late... This must have been made in the late 80s, so you still had all the late 80s things, but...
Yeah.
No, because we didn't know, In Living Color was 90, so it must have been made in 90. And also Back to the Future 2. I don't know. Look at those boots. What did he direct? Did he direct Ice Pirates?
Yeah, Ice Pirates.
There you go.
This is him showing his Ice Pirates training.
You think when he was on set, Stuart Raff was like, when I had all the money I had on Ice Pirates, man,
when I had all the money I did on Ice Pirates, I did a darn good job of it, I did.
There you go. Anti-American humor. Ooh. From Europeans.
Anti-American humor. I mean, you know, Reagan might have been out of office, but we were still feeling patriotic, darn it. Now, what's this remind me of?
There you go.
Oh, I know what this reminds me of. Ninja Turtles 2, Secret of the Ooze, where people don't know that people think that the turtles talking to Shredder is just part of Vanilla Ice's act.
But they might have ripped that off from this. Yeah.
I don't know.
Because that was 92, right?
They were both – no, it's like – I think these were 91.
Oh.
Yeah. I think it's just great minds think alike is what it is. So yeah. I guess you could call this a sword and sorcery movie, technically.
Yes, it is. It is. It's just shock Albert Pune didn't direct it. and in that case, there would be a director's cut out. Albert Pune would have released the director's cut illegally, and it would be, like, shorter and, like, with fake credits and improperly mastered for DVD. Because that's how Albert Pune rolls.
So you know who was really funny and was in Weekend at Bernie's?
Who?
And wasn't Andrew McCarthy or Terry Kaiser?
Who?
You know, the guy from Return of the Living Dead.
Don
Calfa.
Calfa, yeah.
Don Calfa's hilarious.
I just saw him in Foul Play. He's great.
Yeah, he's really funny, and he's great in Return of the Living Dead, and I know he's in Weekend at Bernie's. So just a quick, you know, tip of the hat to Don Calfa. He's good.
Terry Kaiser, not good.
Don Calfa should have had this part.
Okay, so there you go.
Oh, my God. Did he just shoot him? So that was really violent.
Yes.
That was shockingly violent. I mean, that was just cold-blooded. He just straight up shot that guy, and he fell over like someone would in real life.
Yeah.
After all this fake violence, that was horrifying.
Well, now look what he's doing. He's going to kidnap her and rape her. Like, it's no longer funny anymore. Like, in the first one, they didn't actually want to, you know, do any harm like this. This is very malicious and, you know, evil-minded.
And Stuart Patankin really looks like he's in intense pain. Still, the upbeat music reassures me that everything's going to be okay.
There isn't much change. Oh, look, he's snazzily dressed the security guard now.
So is this guy going to get the girl now?
Oh, yeah.
He's become a real man security guard.
Best actors in the damn movie. It's nice that they, you know.
Wow. That had all the subtlety of a Popeye cartoon.
Stuart Rayfield.
Oh, hey, a hot air balloon. Just what every shitty comedy needs. Police Academy 3, I'm looking at you.
I thought that was 4.
Oh, I think you're right.
Yeah, he goes off. Mahoney goes off with Sharon Stone into the sunset. That ought to be the Police Academy relaunch, is them landing. Like, you know, they were in suspended animation in the air, and they land. Steve Guttenberg and Sharon Stone.
And they still think it's the 80s.
Yeah. Oh, that'd be fucking great. Wow.
Yeah. So, Stuart Rayfield must have gotten this job because he did the Philadelphia experiment. And they were like, oh, you must be a guy who really knows about Philadelphia. what other explanation could there be? I mean, it wasn't because he did Mac and Me, at least I hope not.
I assume it's because he was one of the only ones who do it. I mean, you have to think, Stuart Rayfield directed like 10 movies before this. The guy who directed Mannequin directed 1, and Mannequin 1 is better directed than this. Like,
They're getting some nice location
use
of Philadelphia here in the background. Sped up footage.
Yep.
I'm not buying that this hot air balloon is actually airborne. He's like, and now comes Nicholas so I can rape you.
Because it's a kid's movie. Stuntman. 10th century, shouldn't her pits have just been like...
Oh, yeah. Her vagina's never been properly douched.
Oh, God.
I know, I'm sorry.
Wow.
But you brought it up.
Wouldn't it be amazing if we could somehow put together an episode where we interviewed the cast about their motivation?
Yeah. And it's like, so was your, you know, oh, man, look at how hideous that mannequin is.
Hold on, here's the best part. They murder him accidentally. That's manslaughter there. That would be a diplomatic, and it's like an Elvis mannequin. Look at that hair.
Yeah. So if they take the necklace off now, is he just going to be a bunch of strewn and bloody body parts all over the pavement?
Well, what doesn't make any sense is that the original one was like all wood, right? Like it was full when she was turned into a wooden statue.
Yeah.
But he was turned into a hollow mannequin. That doesn't make any sense. The internal logic of Mannequin 2 just fails. I'm sorry, Mannequin on the Move. We didn't even talk about the fact that it's not even called Mannequin 2, really. It's called Mannequin on the Move. Which makes absolutely no sense.
I think it used to be listed as Mannequin 2 on the Move in, like, the TV guide.
But never the title.
Already?
Yeah, it's over.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Hmm.
Well, what do you mean? What else is going to happen? I mean...
Well, I don't know. It's just kind of abrupt. That's all. I want to find out if, you know, the mom ever. I don't know.
Hold on, you do get some resolution. Here you go.
Oh, okay. Yeah. See, I was afraid they were going to jump right into the credits.
What's up with
there?
His white suit?
I thought there wasn't going to be a
montage. No, they paid for the song again. Like it's like the only good thing. They paid for the song again. It's embarrassing.
Oh, look, the Swatch store.
Synchronize your swatches. But look at the people who are in the car.
Yeah, who
like,
are all these
people?
These
are the new buddies. This is the new group of friends for Mannequin. It's
like the
Stuart
security
Patankin,
guard.
Stuart Patankin, the mom, the security guard, and his girlfriend. They're the new buddies. And then the two dimwits are going to run out and wave. And you're just kind of like...
Was this song in the first Mannequin?
Yes, this is the song. This is the Oscar-nominated song from the first one. So
this is
how they tie it into it. And it's like, and you have this very, you know, well, I mean.
I wonder if Tanya Wolf Raggier has sculpted any other mannequins for any films.
I don't know, but it. Yeah. So,
Mannequin 2. I mean, Mannequin on the Move.
Mannequin on the Move. Oh, here's your cast of characters. So.
I'm not seeing anybody that I didn't notice the first time. I like how Jim Metall played a grip. That must be really confusing on his resume.
Probably not. Lead dancer, Coco. Coco might very well have been, you know, famous back in...
Yeah, the Philadelphia dance scene.
Stunt people. A lot of stunt people. Dennis Danger, Matt Alone. Dancers. Oh, I told you. Jennifer Lopez right there.
Oh, Coco was the assistant choreographer also. He or she really did know their stuff.
oh, we should have been ready for this. We could have been like, look, Paul Abdul choreographs the dances. Yeah, so this came out in the theater there.
Uh-huh. And you saw it. You lucky dog.
Yep. There you go. Hey, I didn't know that this, like, ever got any play on Comedy Central or anything big. Like, I assumed it was...
Oh, yeah.
I assumed it disappeared after it, you know, got released on VHS. Like, I had no idea that anybody remembered it. Because, I mean, like, when you say that the first one's a hit, no, like I said at the beginning, the first one's a really big hit. It's the 90, like...
Nothing's gonna stop us now.
Okay, that's the end of our, when we do the tour of Philadelphia with the Gangsters.
Filmed on location in Philly, PA.
Look at all the people we're thanking.
Yep. University of Pennsylvania. Okay, so I think William Ragsdale's room was a dorm room. Yeah, his mom's house, that must have been like a, you know, a dorm house. Hi! Wiener, wiener, wiener.
They don't have
any... What was that? Were they trying to fake you into thinking the credits were over? And then, music supervisors. The music supervisor, they give them a lot of space, don't they? Look at this. Were there supposed to be more credits there?
No, I think they're dragging it out for the point of the credits.
The song.
But if you'll notice, none of these people who do the music have any... there you go. A couple of the people actually have record labels they're on. Most of them do not.
Copyright 1991.
One, Gladden Entertainment.
What's that NABBIT thing? National Association of Broadcast Employees?
Huh.
Huh. Who knows? Yeah. All right. Well,
no release by 20th Century Fox, so either MGM cut it or... Yeah. Yeah.
It's amazing how many movies MGM picked up whose original distributors just got rid of them. I mean, besides the whole Orion catalog...
Well, the whole problem is I'm going to try and get it here. I think they picked up all of Gladden Entertainment's because Fox didn't want it. Fox didn't release Mannequin on DVD or on video. Freaking Vestron did. It was back in the days of Vestron.
Old Vestron.
Yeah, good old Vestron. But if I'm looking at Gladden's list of 10 productions right now, this was their final one. They did Manhattan Project, which is undoubtedly where they met Stuart Raphael. Wisdom, Emilio Estevez's first movie that's in a dream sequence. Yeah.
That's supposed to be pretty bad, that one.
Mannequin, The Sicilian of all things, which was Michael Cimino's attempt to turn Christopher Lambert into Marlon Brando. Gleaming the Cube, which was skateboarding with Christian Slater, I think, right? Weekend of Bernie's 1. Millennium, which was that time travel thing. Okay, wait for it. Here we go. Which one of these things is not like the others? The Fabulous Baker Boys. You know, Oscar-nominated Fabulous Baker Boys. And then Short Time with Dabney Coleman, and then this, and then they were done. This was all they did.
Well...
Yeah.
I don't know what to say. That was awful. And I'm glad I never watched it on TV. And I'm not happy that I watched it now.
Oh, you wouldn't have known that Mishash Taylor was straight if you hadn't watched it now.
Exactly.
And you didn't want to know that.
It's disappointing. I didn't want to know that Lamar from Revenge of the Nerds wasn't gay. That was a disappointment. Now this, I just don't know what to believe anymore. Well, anyways, our next episode of an Alan Smithy podcast is My Science Project,
And
the and Real Genius, which both came out in 85, and both were about, you know, wacky boy geniuses making science projects that cause mayhem. And yeah, my science project is the bad one, just in case you don't know. Although I've never seen it. I'm taking your word for it, because I think you've seen it, right?
I have, but I haven't seen it in... Okay, so My Science Project was one of those, like, HBO movies.
I see it's from the writer of The Last Starfighter.
Yeah.
And the writer-director of Theodore Rex.
Yeah.
So I think that answers my question. Yeah.
So I saw it a lot as a kid. I don't think I ever saw My Science Project as a teenager, even. I saw it when I was 7.
Yeah.
And okay, Real Genius I didn't see till I was a teenager, so.
And Real Genius is funny stuff and definitely kind of, you know, forgotten of late, so.
Yeah, it's been, yeah.
It's due for a little reappreciation by who better than us, you know. And if I'm not mistaken, I think someone from Revenge of the Nerds is in it. Like, maybe even Lamar. Nah, I guess not. I guess that would be too much of a coincidence to ask for.
Well, it does have William Atherton in it, so.
And John Grease, who I have a lot of respect for now after seeing Joysticks and Terror Vision.
Now, what's that?
Well, Joysticks is...
It does have somebody from Revenge of the Nerds as Michelle Marinick, who was Judy in Revenge
of
the Nerds.
Oh, that's what I was thinking of, right. And John Grease, he plays this wacky video game obsessed punk in the only wacky teenage sex comedy of the 80s set in a video game arcade called Joysticks. And then a few years later, he was in the best Charles Band production that I've ever seen, maybe outside of Tourist Trap, which is Terror Vision from 1986, which also has like Garrett Graham and Mary Warrenov, and it's really funny. But anyways, yeah, I guess we'll be talking about him and, you know, the career of Val Kilmer and all kinds of other stuff. But don't be confused, folks. The next episode is another good movie, bad movie episode. We're not going to be watching these movies in full, so we'll have to constrain our thoughts on both movies to about an hour. But there will be more commentary tracks in the future, and you're free to make suggestions.
That
so
would be nice. Suggestions would be fun.
Yeah, aside from Batman Returns, which has been...
Yeah, we know. We have to do it, okay?
Which I'm looking forward to. I think it's a good idea.
Maybe for what the one. What's the one?
When Dark Knight 3 comes out.
No, not... Or when Dark Shadows comes out. We can do it when Dark Shadows comes out. Because it reunites...
Johnny Depp with Tim Burton?
No, it reunites Tim Burton and Michelle Pfeiffer.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But then, you know, Dark Knight 2 has Catwoman in it. So we could do it for either, whichever one comes out first.
Yeah, but I'm not seeing Dark Knight 2. So.
Well, I'm not either. I'm just saying.
Okay.
Do it for the sake of Google hits. Yeah. Those of you still listening, this is how we talk when we're not doing the episode.
When we try to figure out why we want to watch these things and when we want to watch them. Okay.
All right, well, so. Yeah. For an Alan Smithy podcast, this has been Matt.
And this has been Andrew.
And thanks for listening.